Any questions?
I can say that this could have been written 5 minutes ago. I mean, the timeliness of it. I mean, it's just like it's time travel.
It's just there in the culture. It's just surfacing. Which means we should probably refer back to our old Black Panther newspapers and develop new strategies. Yes?
What inspired about the screenplay sort of format?
Because it wasn't working for me in conventional narrative formats. Basically, I just wanted to present the images and have the reader deal with the images themselves directly, rather than me editorializing, making some moral command, you know, like racism is bad, you know. For me, I needed a way to viscerally deal with those feelings. And I was able to do that. Also, I don't know how this relates, but it relates somehow. This book grew up in public, meaning when I first started writing it, presenting it, I did it in, you know, a live spoken word format, because I said there was no one who would be interested in publishing it. And to publish really means to make public, and to do an oral presentation was best. So I got a sense of what people responded to, didn't respond to, and can make adjustments accordingly. It's novel as well as performance piece for me. I came out of a place called Neither Nor on the Lower East Side. It was East 6th Street, which was a jumble of writers and painters and musicians. There were a lot of free jazz musicians, many of whom had played with Sun Ra. And when I first started reading, the people in the audience were made up of these jazz musicians, gave you a hard time if what you had to read wasn't correct. So it was kind of this battle with the writer-reader and the audience. And so the book in many ways grew out of that struggle, like being heard and to make these people laugh, you know. So it grew out of that experience. The idea for the screenplay came from Michael O'Donoghue, who was at the time head writer for Saturday Night Live. He suggested that, and I tried it, and it worked for me. I don't think I would do that now, basically because the form isn't living enough for what I want to do now. It's not alive. You know, I'm like real concerned with language, how it sounds and how alive it might be. And I want to strike those places, which partially explains the work I do with Val Gente. But yeah, did that answer your question? Okay. Yes.
in, I had an earlier copy of this where there was different images, and it said, if you think this is racist, you suffer from negrophobia. And it was that was when, because I read this and I read it as Bubbles was black, and he said, you have one line where indeed you do say it, but just that one image.
Actually, two.
And then also all the assault of images from the media that so much of were just, the devil has found his work with the media.
Yeah.
And how much we're assaulted with image. And that you said that, and I think it was in an interview, you said that you grew up around these images and were like, this isn't meant to be taken seriously. That's what it speaks to me.
I did grow, and you know, I grew up in the 60s, you know, as a child watching television, and you know, they hadn't banned the Little Rascals yet or Amos and Andy, and these were shows that I watched because they had black people, and also, although the NAACP was responsible for getting that show taken off the air because it supposedly stereotyped black people's behavior, I and many other black people enjoyed that show. Why? The performers in that show were actually veterans of old black vaudeville. And the show was sometimes written by an old black vaudevillian named Flournoy Miller, who had written a musical in the 20s called Shuffling Along, okay, which was like this huge black musical review that was quite a sensation on Broadway, so much so that it went to Europe. And like, that's what started the black expat community there. You know, you had people like Josephine Baker or Bricktop, who moved there. She opened up a jazz cafe, which was either in Paris or Italy. Both. I met her in one of those places. I was a child. She didn't seem to think too much of me. But that's possibly because she was not used to children.
Unlike Josephine Baker.
Yes. Who I did not meet.
When did you say the shows got taken off the air?
This was like in the early 60s. Part of the whole like beat ethos takes place in Paris, you know, the Paris Beat Hotel. I was very good friends with Terry Southern, who used to tell me hilarious stories about the Beat Hotel and buying hashish from Haji. And he told me about a time where James Baldwin was caught stealing towels from the hotel.
I think it was more just what you said about how the image becomes reductive, and that you never thought that this was the only interpretation. This is not, I mean, and it's like, we get so reductive about images and representations, and then that's when it becomes problematic that we can't see outside of one wing or one thing.
What you're referring to is the fact when I was a child, I and my friends would laugh at these images. We didn't actually associate them with ourselves.
Yeah, that's what you were saying. Yeah.
And because I didn't feel personally invested in these images, I felt free to play with them. You know, it wasn't my intention to piss people off. By playing with these images, it was a way, it was a kind of a psychic healing for me, you know, that I could use these images as a weapon against those who initially, you know, fired them at me. And the other thing, too, is that these are caricatures, these are blackface images, they're masks. So who's wearing the mask? Which is, I think, the key thing, you know, which... opens up questions of race and all of that, which I happen personally, I think all of that stuff is an illusion. I mean, there's a reality of my black skin, but ideas associated with that are abstract. They're simply construct. I don't have to identify with those. Personally, because of my experience, I think all identity is illusion. And that comes from the experience I've had with deep meditation. You know, I see several selves in there. Should I read more?
Yeah.
It won't be from
like
the. I've been doing these word things. I don't call it poetry. It's just me playing with words and finding the forms of whatever. And this, you know, contributes to my larger long-term project, which is rooted in a kind of Voodoo reality and speaks of new age, a coming new age. This piece is basically the last 7 minutes in Sun Ra's brain as he's dying. I am the calm membrane of the unstruck drum, the vaginal tuning fork's infinite hum, omnidirectional cord of ecstasy, the big bang wet writhing keening in your lover's ear. Ein Freudenklein es Erhaltung. Electric tines churn tumult of darkened heavens, illuminating soul's black sun interior. Strangely, I've forgotten how to breathe. Breathe in, breathe in, breathe in, not out. Silver disc cruise over the magic city, invisible to all but the third eye. Armada or airborne virus? Afronaut invasion or contagion? Pink elephants on parade or spiked lemonade? I don't know why. I'm high in the sky. My oh my. Kiss my ass goodbye. Goodbye. In search of a ghost in rotted shoes that daddy she will never find, the wounded mulatto shuffles the deck of the African cotereau and draws the amniotic night mother of many limbs and cries Urzuli in her puddle of charged affluence. She lunged in torrential rage in a flurry of arms, hands, hair, scythe. Her fist shatters breastplate, cracking bone, plunging through chest, blood in a froth of bubbles and splintered shards, unmooring my heart, a muscle organ meet in the gutters with ganglia of pulsing nerves. Her claws, the thorns of delicate hands, unsheath my chest, a cavity, an empty chamber haunted by ghosts spinning in centrifugal void. She draws this muscle, this organ, this heart to her mouth, biting its flesh with bleached incisors. It bursts bitter juice like rotted fruit. Rivulets spill in red plasma over her lips, plasma over her, the incline of her lower flue. She howls in lunar silhouette, crouched on hind legs, matted with claw clots of pungent shag. In the mirror of sleep, her gaze returned, a carousel blurred in the centrifugal void, the wolf clown collage in the refracted planes. Rides up and down, around and around, a horse crafted in wood, carved by hand, its whittled nostrils flared, snorting confetti, its eyes lifeless daubs of white enamel. I stare at the center of my eyes' reflection. In my silence, I am armored. An energetic field replicates the black mother. She dangles your severed head. She is Kali. In my silence, I am invisible. I am earth. I am sky. I am light. I am darkness. I am Gede. This is my grave. That's it. Any other questions? Would you like to leave? Well, thank you for coming. I've enjoyed. Yes?
How much of an influence would you say Steve Cannon, Grubot, Bang and Jive Around, Ishmael Reed, John Ferris, you mentioned Terry Southern, Candy were to?
I'd have to go through each of those writers individually. Steve Cannon is like important in terms of making me aware of a kind of a history of the writers, that the company of writers that I grew up with. Ishmael Reed clearly is his sense of humor and his willingness to take risks. Terry Southern, I learned how to write a sentence. I learned how to write a sentence from reading Terry Southern, who in turn wrote, learned how to write a sentence from reading William Faulkner. Ferris had a profound influence on me as a human being. It was more than his artistry, it was his character. Regardless of how cranky and sarcastic he was, there was like a real wisdom, a real appreciation for life and other people. I miss Ferris. I don't know. I think one of the truest things Ferris ever said to me, which also includes Norman Douglas, was we were standing in Thompson Square Park one night, and he looked at Norman and I and he said, "Fellas, you realize we're the last black men." That said a lot to me, and it was true in a lot of ways. You know, that there were connections that we had that connections and ties we had, familial, societal, that we had, that generations that followed us wouldn't have, and they would forget. And part of one of my goals is to try and make that connection in my writing so it's not lost. I don't know how much more I could say now, but I think Farris deserves wider publication, and if this particular experience reestablishes my connections with mainstream publishing, that was one of the first things I hoped to do, was bring his work, you know, into the public. That's all I got to say.